Welcome to The Storied Human. Each week, I will tell you a story, or I will talk to someone who has their own compelling story to tell. I'm a writer who loves to write, but even more, I love to hear stories. Did you know that humans have been telling each other stories since before they wrote? It is one of our most basic forms of communication. And we still love stories that are really old. There's just something wonderful for humans in stories. I hope to explore the treasures inside of our stories. Hopefully we will all connect and feel close, learn together, and just maybe start to remember who we really are. So tell me, what's your story? I'd love to hear it. Hi, and welcome to The Storied Human. Today, I'm really happy to have Regina Pasqualone. She went from being a teacher to being an entrepreneur, and she now does her candle business, Tiny Kitchen Candle Company, full-time. So she's got a cool story. She just happens to be my niece, and it's great to talk to her. So welcome, Regina.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
How are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. I'm so looking forward to this because I do know you and I see you, you know, at family things, but I would love to know more about how you were raised and what your family life was like. And especially I like to ask people, what was the 8-year-old you like? What we like then, it really does, you know, you connect back to that. And sometimes when people are unhappy, coaches ask them like, well, what did you like when you were 8? So what was the 8-year-old Regina like?
The 8-year-old Regina. I was very, very, for lack of a better term, girly when I was 8. I like loved Madonna and Madonna and makeup. And I danced and I was really into that and cheerleading and all those things that you would traditionally associate with a little girl. I was super, super girly. That was like,
what so
I
was, cute.
Yeah.
Now you have siblings. Was your sister girly?
I don't think I have two sisters.
Okay.
My one sister and I are 3 years apart. And then my youngest sister, we're actually 10 years apart. And wow. I would definitely say, you know, when my youngest sister was young, I mean, I was so much older than her. So, you know, when she was 10, I was 20 and I was like going out and going to the bars and the clubs with my friends and the makeup and all that. And she would just sit there and watch, like, whoa, you know, like she thought that was so cool. But my middle sister, Jackie's more of, I would say, an old soul. We have like a different style. And that really wasn't her thing, right? Like that wasn't her thing. I don't know how I would categorize her otherwise. She's very thoughtful and she's very giving and she's very considerate. And she is now like the best aunt to our son and to my nephews and my niece. She's just wonderful. So
you all seem close. Like I haven't met your family much, but you definitely seem tight. Like you seem very connected.
You know, you asked about my childhood. I mean, I'm one of 5, right? So
that's a lot.
5 kids. I have a twin brother. So I had never had like a period of time where it was just me. There were 5 of us. So there were 7 people living in, you know, just a very average 3-bedroom home. I mean, we were on top of each other, right? So there was no privacy. There was no, like, there was no time to yourself. There were no boundaries. It was just,
wow.
We were always like around each other. I think there was definitely a period of time where, you know, when you're living like that for a long time, like you want your space and you want time away. You're just like, leave me alone, leave me alone. But now that we're older, I think that our relationships we're getting back to a point where we're closer and we appreciate the fact that we do have so many people to kind of, you know, rely on if we need.
I love that. I think as you get older, that's so important. It's so nice to have that.
Right.
Now, what was it like having a twin, your fraternal twin?
Yes, I have a twin brother and to this day, I still am very protective of him.
Aww.
And you would think that it might be reversed, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
a boy would be, but I was always like bigger than Joe. His name is Joe. I was always bigger than him. Like he had his growth spurt. Now he's much bigger than me, but I was always like bigger and taller. And, but I wanted to always like, I think I wanted to hang out with Joe more than Joe wanted to hang out with me. Like, but that's, you know, whatever it is. What, like I said, there were so many people and he probably just wanted his space, but, yeah, I love that. Like, I always tell people, like, I have a twin. Like, I think it's cool, you know?
I do think it's cool. It's so neat. And people don't know unless you tell them, right?
Right, right.
They don't know that about you. So here's another weird question. Did you make stuff when you were little? Were you crafty?
That's a good question. That's a long time ago.
Yeah.
I mean, I can remember... You know what? There's like this memory that sticks out to me. I forget how old I was, but my mother's sister, there's a very big difference between their age as well. So my mother's sister is much younger than her. And we would go visit her and, you know, her parents on the holidays. And she had this storybook that she made, right? And it was all made from construction paper. She cut all these. I just remember being like, I love this. This is so beautiful. Oh. I want to make one of these. I thought it was like the coolest thing ever. Everything she put into that book was cut and glued and made by hand. And I remember being like drawn to things like that, like handmade things. In terms of like what I made, I don't know. My father used to be like, he would save like my artwork from school. Like I had art class and he'd save it. He's like, "You're so talented, Regina." And I'm like, okay, see, Dad.
But this is like my theory that you were always creative and that you always had an eye because let's talk about your candles because they're really special. As soon as I saw your candles, I said, these are just beautifully designed. Like, you know, there's tons of candles on the market.
Right, right.
I was so drawn to what they look like that amber colored jar and that beautiful, like in the beginning you had the gold foil labels and now you have the beautiful designs.
Yeah.
And then I lit one, you had the wood wick.
Right.
And the little bit of crackling. I just was like, Calgon, take me away. You know, it's like, and the smell was so good too. How do you get them to smell so good? How did you come up with them? I mean, cause they're much more than just a candle.
Yeah. I think, you know, it wasn't just about like, you know, anyone can make a candle, right? Like, honestly, anyone can make a candle.
Right.
So it wasn't just about making candles. It was about a complete sensory experience. Cause you think about candles and you think about, okay, it's just about the smell. Right. But it doesn't have to just be about that. Right. So, you know, when I was thinking of doing this, you know, in my mind, I wanted to create a great product, but I also wanted to fill this creative void that I think that I had been feeling. And so it was very important to me, not only to create a really well-made candle, but also something that was beautiful. Right. So, these were all things I took into consideration. Like, how can I appeal to our sense of smell? I mean, obviously through fragrance. What about your sense of sound? I mean, there's a reason why I selected a crackling wooden wick. There is something really soothing about it.
It is.
And in terms of like visuals, again, like the soft glow from the amber jar, I was very, very adamant about the label that I was going to use. There's lots of different papers that you can use when you make a label, but I knew that I wanted something that had texture. And I found a really great paper and I knew that I wanted like a really classic, like old school, like gold foil print. And, you know, they can do all this laser metallic stuff. Now I said, I don't want that. I want like a press. That's like, I want that.
Like a real thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's some dimensionality to it. Yeah.
Yeah. So you know, all of these things I took into consideration when I was making them.
So your dad was right. You are creative.
Well, thank you.
It's just a natural, like, it's so cool when somebody finds their thing, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're beautiful. I love them. Tell me just a little bit more about the essential oils because I've never smelled candles like this. They're just, there's layers of smell. You know, I told you before, I have a very snobby nose. I've always been like, and I didn't even know it. Like when I was little, my mother would buy cheaper soap for the bathroom and I'd be like, I hate how this smells.
Right, right.
So, I mean, not that I'm an expert, but I do seem to like the really good stuff. So
right.
How did you get to that point where you could not only pick such wonderful really deep, good oils, essential oils, but you mix them. Like, how did you start that?
Well, it was really important to me that the products that I were putting out were different, right? That were different than other candles that you can get. So that was really important to me. I spent a lot of time looking into different suppliers, and it was really important that I was getting my hands on the highest quality fragrance oils that I could. And so once I found suppliers that were reputable, that were producing high quality phthalate free fragrance oils, that was important to me as well. I took them and I just started playing. You know, I'm not a trained perfumer, right? I'm not, but again, I do have that like creative side. So I was like, I'm going to blend these oils and see what happens. And sometimes, you know, I'd come up with something that wasn't so great. And then sometimes I would, you know, like there's a bunch of our candles that I like Prohibition and Rome. I mean, those are very unique fragrances. And I really just kind of stumbled upon them. So I'm really happy that I did it.
You know, but that's so fun that you have something so original and people respond to that. I know Prohibition sells really well, doesn't it?
Oh, it's like our bestseller now.
Now tell me about what that smells like. Cause I have a bunch of them, but I don't have that one.
Right. So the whole concept behind Prohibition is to kind of take you back to, you know, like a 1920s speakeasy, perhaps we're sitting in a back room with some high rollers playing a little poker. We're sitting on, you know, plush leather couches and we're smoking cigars and we're drinking nice cocktails. That's kind of the whole concept behind that. And, you know, when I was creating that fragrance, I was like, I need to make sure that there are notes that speak to that time period. So, you know, we have the tobacco, we have the juniper, which is, you know, essential in making gin. I mean, that was like a huge thing back then, right? So
I love that connection.
These were all things that I was thinking about. And, but that's the concept. That's the concept behind Prohibition.
See, I just think that's really cool. It's really different. And I think people respond to that. It's like, this is not your everyday candle.
Right.
And this is not your everyday scent. And I love that playing. I think that's so much a part of, you know, having fun and being creative and then turning it into something people want. You have that energy, all that fun energy that you're putting into it. And it's really original. I mean, I don't know any other candles that are called Prohibition. And I'm also thinking that men probably like it too. So I think that's cool. It's always nice to have scents that men like.
They do. It definitely seems to speak to our male clientele. But I'm going to tell you, most of the time, women open up that candle and they love it too. So
they love it too.
I really try to create scents that that are androgynous. I don't want it to be too feminine. Yeah. I don't want it to seem too masculine because then you're really limiting your customer base. And I'm trying to reach customers that appreciate a good product and want something different. So
yeah, it's really cool. I think you found your niche. So let's go back a minute. Just a minute to, you go to high school, right? Your parents are like, best thing to be is a teacher. Is that what they said?
Well, the best thing to do is you're going to college. All right, fine.
Okay. All right.
That was, I mean, I understood that and I wanted to go to college. It wasn't like, you know, I was an English major and it's interesting because when I went to school, I started out as a bio major for physical therapy. And I learned really quickly that really wasn't going to work for me. I wasn't doing very well in my intro to bio class. It wasn't good. So I switched over to English, which, you know, I probably should have started out as that because if there was one thing that I was really passionate about from when I was a kid, and I guess I didn't mention this before, but I loved to read.
Ooh, yeah.
Loved to read. And I enjoyed those classes so, so much. When you become an English major, you know, there's limited paths really that they present to you. You can become a teacher, you can go into publishing.
And, you know, writing. I was an English major. Yeah.
Right. So, and you know, I, at the time, and I mean, maybe it's still true, but I wasn't, you weren't going to make good money in publishing. Right. And well, you really weren't going to make good money in teaching either, but you had summers off and a pension and great health insurance. So I was like, let me weigh my options. So I did go into teaching. And I did that for 14 years.
Wow.
14 years.
So that's a career that you left.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Full major career.
Yeah.
And you were good at it. I know you liked it.
I think I was a good teacher. I mean, I had been told by many people that I was a good teacher. So I'm going to take their word for it.
Yeah.
I felt like I was, you know, doing my best at all times to connect with these kids. So
I think you have that thing that I've seen in good teachers where you, the principal at my kids' middle school called it unconditional regard. You just really care about the children. And so that compels you to do your best because you care about them. It sounds obvious, but not everybody feels that, you know, they still do a great job, but you had that caring. I always felt that caring coming from you.
Yeah. I think the best teachers that I've seen, the teachers that I've worked with, those are the ones that the kids are going to respond to, right? Like they just want to know that you have their back and that you're in their corner. So
it's huge. It's huge. Yeah.
Sure.
So that's wonderful. That's wonderful that you had that.
Yeah.
So now you're getting this idea. Oh, one thing I wanted to ask you was I saw some really nice things that you used to make. So you were sort of putting your toe in the water before the candles. You were making some beautiful things and selling them, like burlap wreaths and beautiful, things for the home.
Right.
So you were sort of thinking already, right? Like maybe I could spin off something. You had this creative urge. So how did it happen? Like you just started thinking more about the candles. You started to think, well, maybe I'm just going to give this a try.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, I think you can remember, like I had made some candles years ago, very simple soy candles. And I know that I had like given them out to family members. I'm pretty sure that you got one. And
yeah, we did.
You know, but I wasn't happy with that particular product. And I knew that I could do better. But yeah. And you know, I was making the wreaths and I was, again, there was clearly a void.
Yeah.
I didn't feel like, or I felt that there was something in me that I needed to express that I couldn't do as a teacher. You know, like and let me tell you, I mean, I spent hours, and as all teachers do, hours upon hours trying to put together these amazing, engaging lessons for kids. But it's, you know, it's not the same. I don't know how else to put it. It's not the same kind of creativity, or at least it wasn't for me.
I think that some people just have that impulse. They have a creative impulse.
Yeah.
And they have to do it. You know, they have to find a way to let it out. And I think it's significant that this happened in your 30s, because that's kind of when people sort of shed whatever imprinting they have from their past, whatever expectations, and they start to become that, you know, individual, that unique adult. And that's what I saw happen to you, where you were just like, well, this is calling me, you know, the phone is ringing and it's
like, I'm picking it up.
The creativity phone is ringing. Right.
Yeah.
And I love this. I love your whole journey because I feel like you put a toe in the water with the beautiful wreaths.
Right.
You tried to make candles and you were always just thinking, I'm going to do this better.
Yes.
And so tell me about, now this happened fast. I'm amazed at how quickly it did happen. Tell me how it happened and when you knew it was okay to leave teaching.
So, all right. So it was November 2019, I had the idea that I really wanted to build create a great product, build this company. By July of 2020, so that was what, 6 months later, 7 months later, I launched Tiny Kitchen.
Oh, so cool.
And then I taught for one more full year. And then by February of 2021, we had gotten, I mean, I was already in a place where I was like, I want to leave. I want to do the candles full time. We had been contacted by Whole Foods. And when I think that was just a sign. It was a sign that it's okay. It's okay to take this leap, to take this risk. Because I was like, if a company like that thinks my product is good enough for their shelves, then it's good enough for any shelf. So
Then you know, right.
I'm going to go.
How did that happen? Like, how did they find you?
One of their buyers was shopping, in Montclair. Our candles are in a adorable shop in Montclair. I love that shop. White House, White Rabbit, White Rabbit, Black Heart. Anyway, so one of their buyers was in there and she bought the candle and she loved it. And she sent me an email and, I thought it was spam. I was like, this is, I was like, what is this? And it had all this stuff on the bottom and a Whole Foods logo. And I was like, what's this about? But yeah, she was a buyer and she said, I think your candles are great. Would you want to send some samples for my team to review? And I did. And they were like, they love them. And that was it. A few months later, we were on the shelves. So
now that's amazing to me. So what I'm hearing is you did your part and got your stuff out there in the shops.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's what you, now tell me about how that happened. Cause I remember it was pretty gutsy of you. You just went and said, hey, want my candles?
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, listen, I have no sales experience. I have no business experience. And I think maybe it's that kind of like ignorance worked to my benefit in this situation. Yeah. I was like, I have nothing to lose. Right. Yeah. And I think once you know that, like the worst thing they could say is no, right? What's the big deal? So I was utilizing social media, mostly, and I was literally just looking up shops that I thought my candle would fit well in. And I would send them a message on Instagram or Facebook or perhaps email them. And, most of them got back to me and were like, yeah. Like, I was like, what? Like, yes, I was getting a lot of yes.
So great.
There was very little, there was no, I didn't walk directly into any shops.
Okay.
All these connections were made.
You contacted them and they all said yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, granted, like we'd have a follow-up meeting and I'd bring the product for them to see and smell and that was fine and give them samples. Yeah. But for the most part, they said yes. And most of them were still in. So most of them.
See, I love that. And I know that you haven't had like mindfulness training necessarily or business training, but everyone who gives advice about this kind of thing says, you got to take the step out, just take the step out, just take the action. And you just knew that intuitively. You were like, what could I lose? But I think it's also nice that you had a full-time job at, you know, that you could sort of ease your way into it.
Absolutely.
It still takes a lot of guts to just say, I'm going to reach out to some shops. So I like that you did that. You got your stuff on their shelves. And that's why the Whole Foods connection happened.
Yes.
And now you're in Whole Foods, which is like a big deal. And you have like that big poster. I saw a picture of it, big poster where they're saying we sell local stuff and it's you. And I love that. It's kind of hard to believe, right? When you look at that.
Oh yeah. It's really hard. Like, you know, Dom, your nephew, my husband, when we knew they were there, like when we knew they were in the Whole Foods that's nearest to us, he's like, I'm going to go take a ride and look. He's like, you want to come? I'm like, no. I was like, I don't know why. I was like, no, I'm good. Like,
it's almost too much, right?
Too much. Like my face is on a poster in the, you know, like what? It's crazy. But
I love that.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool. I just feel like there's, when you bring those candles, when you had that second meeting and you bring them in, I just think they speak for themselves. It's just so wonderful. People love them, you know, so you don't have to say like, oh, this is going to be, you know, how some salespeople, they go crazy and tell you all about the product. You don't really need to. It's obvious how wonderful they are. And you can just point out a few things. They just sell themselves. So that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I know that you've been getting more exposure too. Like I heard about the home. I always say it wrong. House and Garden.
House and Garden. Yeah.
Okay. And they named your candles are in there, like a list of really cool things we found or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, House and Garden, they're UK based. So they're, a UK magazine. But they reached out to us and they said, hey, we think your candles are great. We'd like to, you know, give you a little spot here in our magazine. And so cool. It's interesting. Cause like, I noticed that a lot of my like most recent followers on Instagram are in the UK.
Is that crazy?
So I'm like, yes, people are seeing this, you know, like, let's go, like, let's expand overseas, you know? So yeah, it's good.
The magic of social media. It's just magical.
Yeah.
You know,
for sure.
And people do. They say, oh, I'm going to look them up. Oh, I'm going to follow them. That's so great.
Yeah.
So that happened. And also I saw you, it was domain. I saw on your website you were.
Yeah. Yeah. It's called My Domain. And I'm going to be honest with you. They did not notify us of any interest. that feature was from like October. And then somebody emailed me in maybe like December or January. It's like, hey, we featured you in here's the link. Like, I'm like, what? I was like, okay
cool. That's a little backwards, but I'll take it.
But I mean, it's so cool. Like it was great. Like it was such a nice write-up and, but I had no knowledge that that was even happening.
It's a little weird. Yeah. And what I like too, is that the kinds of publications that are featuring you, they kind of seem to match that what you're going for. That
absolutely.
That clientele and that aesthetic.
Right.
It's just so exciting to see this, you know, like these things. Now tell me about, you spoke at a networking event, right? A women's networking event.
I did. So there's a small networking organization for women nearby. And they invited me to present. Just talk about the business and the journey and all of that. And so that was my first speaking event. I actually ended up being sick. So I zoomed in. I didn't want to get anyone sick, but I was like, no, I still want to do it. So we zoomed in and it still went wonderfully. And you know, I have made some really incredible connections. And just from that, I mean, there are now some things in the works that could be really great for us moving forward. So, I was very nervous, right? I mean, I have all these years of speaking in front of
kids. I was going to say, you have the teaching. I was thinking that would be a natural thing for you.
But I'll get up and do crazy stuff in front of children. But when I have to get up and speak in front of adults, I'm like,
Different. It's different. Plus there's more on the line now. It's your personal company, right? It's not, not like teaching.
Yeah.
That's so great that you made those connections and that you had a positive experience. You're going to have to, I predict, do that more. You're going to be asked to do that more, because also what happened that night was, you know, women who were worried or were afraid to step out or were thinking about being an entrepreneur, they probably got inspired by listening to you. Like that, you can't even put an amount of value on that, because sometimes you're just wondering like, can I really do this? And here's this nice, cool person saying, yeah, it happened and it wasn't that hard. And I did this and I did that. We just need to know that. And I love women supporting women. I see a lot of that on your Instagram.
Yeah.
So speaking of Instagram, how can we get in touch with you? I'm going to put this in the show notes, but it's always good to mention it.
Yeah, sure. So you can follow us on all social media, Instagram and Facebook. It's at Tiny Kitchen Candle Co. And you can just follow us there, check our stuff out. Send us a DM if you have any questions. I'm happy to answer.
Good.
Yeah.
I see you on there a bunch and I think it's great. It's really fun. It's a fun way for me to keep in touch too with what you're doing. And I just see a lot of other really cool things, like inspirational quotations, and I get to see Dami. It's really fun. He's so cute. Now, we didn't cover at all. Like, I think one job and a kid is hard, right?
Right.
One job and starting a side business and a kid is even harder. Like, how did you swing that? Like, how did you handle that?
Not very well. I did not handle that very well. We've had conversations in the past. It was a tough time for me. The last few years of my teaching career were very, very difficult. I suffer from anxiety and it was probably the worst I've ever seen it in my life. But you know, I think another reason why I was called to start this business was because I was really backed into a corner and there was no place left for me to go. There was nothing that I could do to improve my situation teaching. There was nothing, because I had done everything. I mean, you name it, I did it. So I just, I pivoted. Yeah. I pivoted. I took the risk and I said, I know that I'm putting more work on my plate, but if I can see that this is going to work, then I'm going to go that way now because I can't continue to live like this. I was just in a really, really bad place.
Well, you worked a lot of hours at one point too, didn't you? You're going in early and tutoring after and.
Yeah. So I was working, my teaching schedule required me to be in the building by 7. So, you know, like I was dropping my son off to the babysitter at like 6:30, 6:40 AM. I mean, you know, in the winter, it's still dark out, you know, it was tough. It was tough. And then if I was tutoring afterwards, or if I stayed late for, you know, to help students or collaborate with a colleague, it was a lot. It was just too much. It was too much. I think that's probably the majority of women's experiences in this country. You know, we want to be successful, right? We want to be really great at our job, but there's also we also want to be okay. And we want to take care of our families and enjoy our families. And you just cannot do all of those things well. You just cannot, right?
Most people can't give. Yeah. And some women say, you can have it all, but not all at once.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, there's just some way that you have to work it out. And we're all different. I mean, I know women who did things I couldn't do. They had full-time, crazy, successful careers and they had kids and somehow they handled it all.
Yeah.
You know, the kids did well, they did well. We're all different, you know?
Right.
And I just think that maybe, like you said, there was no way out and that you saw the candle company and building that was a way out. And you made the choice, you pivoted. And that's fantastic to me that you were able to do that.
Thanks.
So how did you tell everybody, like when you were ready to leave, like how did you tell your colleagues?
Well, I didn't, there were a few of them, just a very select few that knew that I was going to go. But you know, and these were not just colleagues. They had become very good friends and they had seen me struggling for 2 years and they knew that I was not well. And, you know, but once I knew, like it was emotional to tell my principal. It's funny because I walked in there and I requested a meeting and he thought I was going to tell him I was pregnant. And I was like, no, I'm resigning. And he was like, no, he was, you know, and it makes you feel bad, right? Like it makes you feel like you really do feel like you're letting somebody down. Like I'm letting this person down. I'm letting these kids down by leaving. But it was also his reaction was a testament to the good work that I had done. Like if he did not have that reaction, then I would have been like, okay, I guess he doesn't care. But he was so like, how am I going to replace you? You know, like,
oh,
what
I love
are you going to do?
And so you left on a high note. I always say,
absolutely.
Leave while you're still doing well, you know, end the TV series while it's still good. Right.
That's right.
How lovely that was. It's nice to get that. Like they're going to actually miss you and he really appreciated you.
Right.
And how did you tell the kids?
When, I'm trying to remember. I mean, I told them in class, I can't remember. When I don't know if it was, you know, the last week of school or whatever, but
I know that's touchy. They don't want you saying it too soon.
Right. And I didn't. I know that I made sure, you know, the paperwork had already been signed, sealed and delivered and all that. And, you know, there were a couple of students that I really had, connected with and that were going, you know, I was teaching during COVID. So there were a lot of students that were struggling and I had been there for them and they were like, Miss, like, what am I going to do? What am I going to do without you? And I was like, listen, here's my email. If you need anything, you can always email me. I'm still here to help you. I just won't be here to be your teacher. But then again, you know, I was very transparent with them and a lot of the kids knew and could see because kids are smart. They could see that I was having a tough time too. So they were like, you have to do what's right for you and your family.
Oh, I love that.
Right? Isn't it great? Like, kids know that. Kids
they
know
do.
That.
Oh, they do. That's
yeah.
So
they're
cool.
Way more empathetic than a lot of adults. So
And they were close to you. They saw you all the time. I mean, right. even virtually, it's just this connection. Right. So what were those first few weeks like? It must have been weird. I mean, you worked your whole adult life up until that point, you know, full time.
Yeah. I think so, you know, as being a teacher and you don't typically work over the summer. Well, a lot of us do actually, but, yeah. you know, once September hit, it wasn't as big. Like, I don't know how I felt just relief. I just felt,
yeah. And that's a sign, right? That it was the right thing. Yeah. Absolutely. You didn't have to like gear up for the curriculum and the new year and all that.
Yeah. Yeah. It was great relief. And, it was really nice. You know, my son started school and I was able to walk him to school and, you know, really be there for him. And so there's no part of me, like everyone always asks, like, do you regret it? Do you miss it? And I don't, I mean, I miss my colleagues. I miss the kids, but everything else, I made the right decision for sure.
Well, there's your sign. Yeah. And you just seem to follow your star, which I love. Now, did you get a little pushback from family members? Like, were they worried about the loss of benefit? You know, everybody talks about how amazing those teacher benefits are.
Yeah. I think there was a little bit, and I wouldn't say pushback. I would just say, like, they were like, all right, well, are you sure you're making the right decision? I mean, I still think that there are family members and they don't say it, but I get the vibe that are kind of like, I don't know if disapproving is the word, but I think they would feel, and again, that's a they problem. I think they would feel more comfortable if I had an employer and a steady paycheck and a pension and all of that. But you know, I can't do that. Like, I can't live my life to make sure other people are comfortable. That's not
how you do it. Right.
Right. So
I remember when Rich and I visited at one of your places that you were selling on the weekend, you and Dom were in Flemington at the farmer's market. It was so cool to see you, like, it just made it real, like, see you there and see the product. And how much has Dom made the difference? I just think he has really been supportive and I want to shout out to him.
Yeah.
You guys are so, you're a great team.
You know, we are. And I am very grateful for Dom. He, you know, it really is like a team effort. It really is a partnership with everything. And I think, you know, from the get-go, when Dom saw how I was in such a bad way, and he was just like, I don't want to see you like this anymore. Like, I want you to feel better. He supported me on this idea from day one. And he has been such an important part of all this. I mean, the label design, all the spreadsheets, because I don't do spreadsheets. He does everything with that. He deals with a lot. He deals with a lot. He takes the reins on a lot. And he is just as big a part of this company as I am. So
I love that you work together so well. And I love the support that you give each other. And that adorable child is seeing this, you know, little Dom sees this. You're modeling what it's like to have a healthy relationship where there's concern and there's support and you're a team.
Right.
And I think that's so incredible. So there's just going to be one child, right? I want to talk a little bit about that because I think that's a thing that people like bug you, right?
Right.
When are you going to have that second one? You know,
you know, I think at some point we made it very clear, like, listen, you can say it till you're blue in the face, but there's only going to be one grandkid. You know what I mean? Like, that's it. My grandmother, she'll be like, she said something the other day, cause you know, Dominic's 5 now and he's like not a baby anymore. And she's like, well, it's time to have another one. And I was like, nope, well, maybe we'll get a dog.
I love that.
Listen, it's just going to be one. That whole period of time where I was struggling, Dom and I had intentions to have another. And I was, you know, finding myself in a really bad place. And I think a lot of it was because we were putting pressure on ourselves to have another child because we felt like that was what we should do. But we then, you know, we had a lot of conversations, and I spent a lot of time working through the feelings that I was having about it. And when it came down to it, we were both like, we don't really want to have another one. We're really happy with our family as it is. Dominic's happy and he's healthy, and he makes friends at school, and he has a great relationship with his cousins. And, you know, there's one, and it's fine.
It's all good. And, you know, he's high energy. I mean, I could imagine saying, you know, this is good. We're good. And I adore him, but he's got a lot of stuff going on. I love his mind, how quick his mind is. I wanted you to talk about that because I think it's really important for women to say that, because it's okay. You know, it's okay to have no children. It's okay to just have one child.
Yep.
It's okay. Everybody's different, you know, and everybody's in a different situation, and we have to respect each other's choices. So I love that you talked about that, because that's fair. You know, you have a great family and you have a great career happening here. So what do you see in the future?
Well, I mean, I definitely obviously would love to grow this, and, you know, I'm still making all the candles out of my home. So I'd love to get a space. I would really love to have a storefront at some point. And, it's not just about this product. There's a sense of community too. There's a lot of people that I know and people that I follow on social media that I love their products. They're making these beautiful things. And I would love to be able to sell those products in a store or even on my website, perhaps, to get started. But expansion and growth, but all in good time. Like, it'll happen when it's supposed to, you know.
Well, I just have this feeling that it will happen when it's supposed to, because that's how it's all happened so far. And you just trust that because it's working for you.
Yeah.
I can't thank you enough for sharing all that. Thank you for those details. It's people listen to these things and get really inspired. It's like, well, you know, maybe I could do that thing I was thinking in the back of my mind.
Right.
They did it.
Yeah, absolutely. They totally can.
Excellent.
Thank you.
So I will put your information in our show notes, and I'll put a picture of you. And yeah, I can't thank you enough. It was great.
Thanks
for sharing.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to The Storied Human. And take care. And now enjoy a few more bars of my new intro and outro song written by my son, Brendan Talion. I love that Brazilian feel, and I really like having his original music on my show. So enjoy.